Hello once again, this is Dr. Phil Fernandez, the founder of the Institute of Biblical Defense and the academic dean of Farriston Theological Seminary. Today's lecture is World Religions Lecture Number 7. World Religions Lecture Number 7 will be discussing Secular Humanism Part 1. Secular Humanism Part 1. Brief introduction on secular humanism. Number one, the Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2. It's published by Prometheus Books. Prometheus Books, Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2 were compiled in 1933 and in 1973 by some of the leading secular humanists of their day. And so we go directly to the source, very small work, almost the size of a large pamphlet, and it's secular, it's Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2. Again, they were drawn up in 1933 and in 1973. Before we get started, let's discuss a definition of secular humanism. What is secular humanism? Secular humanism is the worldview that either God does not exist or God is a non-issue in the affairs of man, and that man is the ultimate value in the universe. Let me repeat that. Our definition of secular humanism is that secular humanism is the worldview that God either does not exist or is a non-issue in the affairs of men, and that man is the ultimate value in the universe. So that's our definition of secular humanism. Secular humanism, the worldview that God either does not exist or is a non-issue in the affairs of men, and that man is the ultimate value of the universe, in the universe. Now, why would I talk about secular humanism in a course on world religions? The reason is because secular humanism is a religion. We repeat that. Secular humanism is a religion. One of the definitions that Webster's Dictionary gives for a religion is, and I quote, a cause, principle, or system of beliefs held to with ardor and faith. Let me repeat that. Webster's Dictionary, one of their definitions for religion is a cause, principle, or system of beliefs held to with ardor and faith. So anything held to, any belief system held to, which dictates the behavior, the attitudes, the actions of a person in their life, is basically their religion. To say God exists is a religious statement. To say God does not exist is also a religious statement. Also, the Supreme Court, 1961, Turcaso v. Watkins decision. Supreme Court, 1961, Turcaso v. Watkins decision defines secular humanism as a religion. And also we find that even these humanist manifestos, in their preface and in Humanist Manifesto number 1, openly admits that secular humanism is a religion. Reading from page 3 of the preface written by Paul Kurtz, chairman of the philosophy department of NYU, Paul Kurtz writes in the preface, "Humanism is a philosophical, religious, and moral point of view as old as human civilization itself." And so, here, Paul Kurtz, in the preface of Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2, teaches that secular humanism is a religion. Humanist Manifesto number 1, in page 8, on page 8, they began to talk about some of their affirmations, and it reads as follows. To establish such a religion as secular humanism, to establish such a religion is a major necessity of the present. It is a responsibility which rests upon this generation. We therefore affirm the following. And so they go on to make their affirmations from that point, but they state that secular humanism is a religion. Then they discuss it also on page 9. Page 9, the seventh affirmation. Religion consists of those actions, purposes, and experiences which are humanly significant. Nothing human is alien to the religious. So they're saying there's no such thing as being a human being and being non-religious. And then they state the distinction between the sacred and the secular can no longer be maintained. In other words, no longer can we separate the secular state or secular life and religious life. They're both totally intertwined. Now, this has much applications. In secular humanism, the belief, usually it's the belief that there is no God and that man is the ultimate value in the universe. Well, then that lets us know that sheds a lot of light on the debate whether or not creation should be taught in the public schools. If evolution should be taught in the public schools, if atheistic evolution can be taught in the public schools, then basically secular humanism has become the state religion. So until creationist views can be taught alongside secular humanism and atheistic evolution, secular humanism is the state religion. And that's very sad, since only 9% of Americans today are atheistic evolutionists. Why should we be forced to send our children when the religious views that are being proclaimed from the public schools represent only 9% of the America's population? But secular humanism is a religion, and it should be looked upon as such. We need to understand that. In the monkey trial in the 1920s, it was argued by the ACLU that if creationism is taught in the public schools, evolution should also be taught. It's unfair to teach only one. Well, now at this point, only evolution is being taught. And I think we could use that same argument that the ACLU used earlier, that both sides of the issue should be taught. And until that is done, secular humanism is the state religion of the United States of America. First Amendment reads, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Yet, in school, our children cannot pray and thank God for the food that they have. Many children have been denied their right to read their Bible even during recess periods. And at one time, until the Equal Access Bill, students could not start a club to discuss the teachings of Jesus, but they could start a club and discuss the teachings of Adolf Hitler. And so secular humanism is, in a roundabout way, the state religion in America. So secular humanism is the worldview that either God does not exist, or he is a non-issue in the affairs of man, and that man is the ultimate value in the universe. Secular humanism is a religion, and we get our information on the secular humanists from their writings, the Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2, 1933 and 1973. Now let's take a look at some of the signers of the Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2. The first Humanist Manifesto, on page 10, we have a list of its signers. Pages 10 and 11. And just looking down, I'll just call out a couple there. There's John Dewey, the father of modern education. He's been called the father of modern education. John Dewey was a socialist. He was a secular humanist. And when we find out about his views, we're going to see why his views dominate the public school system in this country. Also, R. Lester Mondale also signed the first Humanist Manifesto. Remember Walter Mondale, who ran against Ronald Reagan, I believe the 1980 election. Walter Mondale is a relative of Lester Mondale. I believe that was his uncle. I'm not exactly sure. But they are related there. And Walter Mondale, of course, holds views that are very similar to the views of his relative. Those are just two that I'd like to mention from the first Humanist Manifesto. The second Humanist Manifesto in 1973, from pages 24 to 30, they have a list of some of the signers of this. There's Isaac Asimov. Isaac Asimov, he's a science fiction author. He's also wrote his own guide to the Bible, which is pretty bogus since he has absolutely no biblical training whatsoever. But he's a well-known man of our time. Moving down the list, Francis Crick from Great Britain, one of the world-renowned scientists. Ed Dorr, who's the head of the Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Moving down the list a little further, we have Anthony Flew, the professor of philosophy, once at the University of Reading, England. I'm not sure if he's there right now, but he's one of the world's leading philosophers. One of my professors debated him on the issue of the resurrection of Christ from the dead. Moving further down the line, Alan F. Guttmacher, who at the time in 1973 was the president of Planned Parenthood. So he had the president of Planned Parenthood. Moving further down the line, the editor of the Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2, Paul Kurtz, also the chairman of the philosophy department at NYU, I believe. Corliss Lamont, who has written several books on the humanistic faith. And then again, Lester Mondale, sign that is probably another one of Walter Mondale's relatives, if not the same guy. Maybe he just got rid of the R in the beginning of his name from earlier. Moving down further, the Andrei D. Sakharov, one of the Soviet Union's head of the Academy of Sciences. Then there's B.F. Skinner, professor of psychology at Harvard University. He's the guy that believes we should start genetic engineering using genetic engineering in order to change people into the kind of people we'd like them to be. Now, additional signers, the list goes on. For the second Humanist Manifesto, you have Alfred Ayer, who is A.J. Ayer, famous philosopher, very anti-Christian in his views. Joseph Fletcher, who teaches situational ethics, which Christians have come up against. Sir Julian Huxley, one of the many Huxleys that are aggressive atheistic evolutionists. Jacques Monod, and again, there's a leading author, leading writer, leading scientist. And the list goes on and on of influential people, people that the average American does not even know who they are, yet they're pretty much calling the shots in this country. And it's very unfortunate that many of us are being ruled by an elite who hold to a worldview that only 9% of Americans agree with. So that's some of the signers of the Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2. Let's take a look at some of the basic beliefs of the Humanist Manifestos. Some of the basic beliefs of secular humanism. First, let's take a look at Humanist Manifesto number 1. They make certain affirmations on page 8. And let's take a look at the first and second affirmations. It reads as follows. We affirm the following. First, religious humanists regard the universe as self-existing and not created. So number one, secular humanists usually hold to atheism. Religious humanists regard the universe as self-existing and not created. Second, humanism believes that man is a part of nature and that he has emerged as the result of a continuous process. I read that again. Second, humanism believes that man is a part of nature and that he has emerged as the result of a continuous process. And so Humanist Manifesto number 1 shows that some of the basic beliefs of secular humanism is atheism and evolution. Atheism and evolution. And then on page 10, the 14th affirmation, let's read this real closely. The 14th affirmation reads as follows. 14th, the humanists are firmly convinced that existing, acquisitive, and profit-motivated society has shown itself to be inadequate, and then a radical change in methods, controls, and motives must be instituted. A socialized and cooperative economic order must be established to the end that the equitable distribution of the means of life be possible. The goal of humanism is a free and universal society in which people voluntarily and intelligently cooperate for the common good. Humanists demand a shared life and a shared world. In other words, in a roundabout way, what they're actually saying is they hold to the belief that socialism is the best form of government. The distribution of wealth, socialism, rather than a free enterprise system like we have enjoyed for so long in America that is suddenly crumbling. And so secular humanism, the first Humanist Manifesto toward atheism, evolution, and socialism. The second Humanist Manifestos. Take a look at page 15 and 16 if you have a copy of the Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2. Pages 15 and 16. Humanist Manifesto number 2 teaches that traditional religion is harmful. This reads, we believe, however, that traditional dogmatic or authoritarian religions that place revelation, God, ritual, or creed above human needs and experience do a disservice to the human species. Any account of nature should pass the test of scientific evidence in our judgment. The dogmas and myths of traditional religions do not do so. We find insufficient evidence for belief in the existence of a supernatural. It is either meaningless or irrelevant to the question of the survival and fulfillment of the human race. As non-theists, we begin with humans, not God, nature, not deity. Some humanists believe we should reinterpret traditional religions and reinvest them with meanings appropriate to the current situation. But we reject those features of traditional religions, religious morality, that denies humans a full appreciation of their own potentialities and responsibilities. But we can discover no purpose or providence for the human species. Humans are responsible for what we are or will become. No deity will save us. We must save ourselves. They also state here, let me just read on down the line. Traditional religion is harmful. That's one of their beliefs. Write that down. Number two, no evidence for belief in the supernatural. Number three, no divine purpose for mankind. what we just discussed on page 14, only man can save this planet. God cannot save this planet. And then they also teach that heaven and hell are harmful illusions. Now, John Lennon must have read this. You know, when you read his, when you hear his song, Imagine There's No Heaven, Imagine There's No Hell, and singing about how the world can come together as one. Well, that's the views of the secular humanists. But they teach that heaven and hell are harmful illusions. Listen to what they say here. Second, promises of immortal salvation or fear of eternal damnation are both illusory, in other words, they're illusions, and harmful. They go on to say further, science affirms that the human species is an emergence from natural evolutionary forces. There is no credible evidence that life survives the death of the body. And they state, traditional religions are surely not the only obstacles to human progress. So saying that there's other things that are obstacles to human progress, but traditional religions are also obstacles to human progress. There's a local community college in my area, Bremerton, Washington, where they are very, very opposed to the Christian faith. And they teach in an outright and open fashion that Christianity is an obstacle to human progress and that mankind can go so far, only so far, unless Christianity is removed, and then it can go much further. Views like this are what is going to bring on Christian persecution once again in this country. Okay, so they teach that traditional religions are harmful. There's no evidence for belief in the supernatural, no divine purpose for mankind. They teach that only man can save this planet, that heaven and hell are harmful illusions. They deny life after death. They teach that traditional religions hinder human progress. They also have some views about ethics that we need to touch on. Of course, we already mentioned the fact that they're atheistic. They believe in evolution, and they believe socialism is the best form of government. But let's touch on some of their views about ethics. The section on ethics on page 17, it reads, third, we affirm that moral values derive their source from human experience. Ethics is autonomous. Autonomous means self-governed. In other words, what's right for you is right for me. It doesn't have to be right for me and vice versa. You decide what's right for you. Don't read the Bible and try to determine what's right and what's wrong. You decide what's right for you. Ethics is autonomous and situational, needing no theological or ideological sanction. Ethics stem from human need and interest. It says human life has meaning because we create and develop our futures. We strive for the good life here and now. And so here very clearly they teach ethics is autonomous and situational. You decide for yourself what is right. You don't have to go along with the program of your religious group or whatever. The controlled use of scientific methods must be extended to further the solution of human problems. No group has a monopoly of wisdom or virtue. That's very strange. They state no group has a monopoly of wisdom or virtue. Who are they claiming to be? They're claiming to be the group that has the monopoly on the truth. But they go on and on. Now they talk about the individual, and what they're talking about is still in the area of ethics. In the area, page 18, in the area of sexuality, we believe that intolerant attitudes often cultivated by orthodox religions and puritanical cultures unduly repress sexual conduct. The right to birth control, abortion, and divorce should be recognized. While we do not approve of exploitive denigrating forms of sexual expression, neither do we wish to prohibit by law or social sanction sexual behavior between consenting adults. So they state that each person determines what is right. They state that a person's right to abortion and divorce should be recognized. And then they state that the freedom to pursue one's own sexual lifestyle, so long as it is between consenting adults, that freedom should be protected. Now, there's a contradiction here. They just stated earlier that human values, that ethics, are autonomous. So they say, you decide what's right for you. Nobody else can make that decision. We don't think these things should be regulated by the government. Then they decide, then they go out and say, we believe that so long as sex is between consenting adults, that freedom should be protected. What's the problem with that? The problem with that is they say, first they say, there's no such thing, no thou shalt not. You decide what's right for you. Nobody else can decide. And then they tell you that we're only for sex between consenting adults, which means they're against rape. It also means they're against having sex with children. In other words, they say, forget the morality taught in the Bible, throw that out the window, everybody decides what's right for them. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they start resurrecting little values out of the Bible, and they say, thou shalt not commit rape. Thou shalt not have sex with children. Now, I'm against rape, and I'm against having sex with children, but at the same time, I, as a Christian, I have the basis to make those statements. I believe there's absolute morality. I believe there's a moral law that all men must answer to. These gentlemen say there's no such thing as right and wrong. However, we're against any kind of sex that is outside sex between consenting adults. And so they contradict themselves. They say what's right for you is right for you. It doesn't have to be right for me, and vice versa. However, abortion rights should be protected. So they're saying that they're forcing their morality on other people. They're saying rape is wrong. They're forcing their morality on other people. And they're saying that incest and sex with children is wrong, forcing their morality on other people. You see, when people say that the government's got no business, government and morality shouldn't mix, they're wrong. People state, Geraldine Ferraro said the government should not enforce morality. Well, the problem with that view is then there's nothing left for the government to do but to pick its paychecks up on Friday. The government must enforce morality. When the government says, thou shalt not kill, it's enforcing morality. So the question isn't, should government enforce morality? The question should be, whose morality is the government going to enforce? The morality of the secular humanist, who represent 9% of Americans, or the Judeo-Christian heritage? That type of morality, which probably anywhere from 60 to 90% of Americans still hold to. Though there's a significant group of people who hold to belief in God, yet they live as if God doesn't exist. But here they teach that ethics are autonomous. Each person decides what's right in their own eyes, but then they go on saying that certain things are wrong for all people. So they contradict themselves. They discuss that the... page 19, a recognition of an individual's right to die with dignity, euthanasia, and the right to suicide. Then they go on to say, people are more important than decalogues. A decalogue is 10 laws, which they're basically talking about the 10 commandments. People are more important than decalogues or the 10 commandments, rules, prescriptions, or regulations. That's true, but why did God give those laws? Because people are so important that without those laws, mankind would self-destruct. They also state on page 19, moral education for children and adults is an important way of developing awareness and sexual maturity. In other words, they want their morality taught in the public schools to children, which they have accomplished, by the way. believe in euthanasia, the right to suicide, and they state that people are more important than rules, which the Bible would agree with, but that's why rules are needed, because people are so important that if you don't have these rules, they're going to kill each other off. Then they go on to state that the state should not favor any particular religion. They state the separation of church and state and the separation of ideology and state are imperatives. The state should encourage maximum freedom for different moral, political, religious, and social values in society. It should not favor any particular religious bodies through the use of public monies, nor espouse a single ideology and function thereby as an instrument of propaganda or oppression. Now, they're stating that the state should not favor any particular religion, yet they admit their beliefs are religious, and that their beliefs need to be taught to children, and that that these other beliefs are hindering human progress, so they got to be rid of. Now, it amazes me that these men call themselves intellectual, but every time they open their mouths, they're contradicting themselves. The government's got no business favoring any religion, but we want the government to teach the religion of secular humanism. Now, page 21, they talk about a world community. Now, here they state the state should not favor any particular religion, yet they want their values taught in the public schools. They want a world community. Page 21, we thus reaffirm a commitment to the building of a world community. So they want a world community built. So the secular humanist goal is leading in that direction for a world community. And of course, they fail to see the dangers of a one world community, which with the Antichrist himself will finally lead. But you see their goals coming into play. Even with a man like President George Bush, who was so opposed to most of their beliefs, still wants a one world the New World Order to come into picture. Now they state on page 21 in affirmation 13, this world community must renounce the resort to violence and force as a method of solving international disputes. We believe in the peaceful adjudication of differences by international courts and by the development of the arts of negotiation and compromise. War is obsolete. Now, that's kind of funny. They want an end of war and reduced military spending, and they want international courts to settle disputes. Now, the question comes up, can the courts stop violence? Can international courts stop violence? And if they cannot stop violence, should the international court have a military to put an end to violence? You see, it wasn't a bunch of peace-loving people sitting around a table and reasoning with Adolf Hitler that put an end to the Third Reich. It was powerful militaries, the United States and the Soviet Union, that put an end to the Third Reich. And they need to recognize man is violent from within, and therefore we need militaries and we need to be prepared for war to offset the problems of war. War is only of the effect of a greater problem, and that problem is the sinfulness within man. But they talk about it as, after saying war is obsolete, they say, so is the use of nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons. It is a planetary imperative to reduce the level of military expenditures and turn these savings to peaceful and people-oriented uses. They talk about the world community must engage in cooperating planning concerning the use of rapidly depleting resources. The planet Earth must be considered a single ecosystem. Ecological damage, resource depletion, and excessive population growth must be checked by international concord. So you got to stop population growth. In fact, many of these gentlemen compliment the Chinese on their birth control techniques. They talk about world poverty must cease, hence extreme disproportions in wealth, income, and economic growth should be reduced on a worldwide basis. What they fail to realize is that it is the wealthy businesses that create more jobs. To take money out of the hands of the wealthy businessmen and redistribute them does not work. That's why communism will always fail wherever it is. But it goes on and on. Technology is a vital key to human progress and development. They hold the view that mankind's problems, all his problems, can be answered just by technology and education. But they fail to realize that when you educate a shoplifter, unless he changes his will, he just becomes an intelligent bank robber. Education alone cannot save. The same technology that they trust in to save mankind has invented weapons that could destroy this planet. So technology is not the answer. The answer is changing the hearts of man back towards biblical morality, not further and further away against it. Listen to this line here. You want to get a kick out of something. They state on page 23, destructive ideological differences among communism, capitalism, socialism, conservatism, liberalism, and radicalism should be overcome. Let us call for an end to terror and hatred. We will survive and prosper only in a world of shared humane values. So they're saying all these other views, socialism, which is one of the views they hold to, all these other views fighting against each other, the only way for mankind to survive is if we have shared human values. But how is everybody going to agree? They can't agree. We're warring with each other because we disagree on human values. And then these guys come along and say, but if we have shared human values, we'll live happily ever after. Well, no kidding. But how is everybody going to hold to these shared human values and agree with the secular humanist world community unless we break out the baseball bats and start fighting amongst each other to see who's the king of the hill? So this is ludicrous. The idea is that these men are proposing no solution to the problem. They're just part of the problem themselves, and they don't even realize it. What more daring a goal, they state, what more daring a goal for humankind than for each person to become, in ideal as well as practice, a citizen of a world community. And they make their God the God of a one world government. States, we, the undersigned, while not necessarily endorsing every detail of the above, pledge our general support to Humanist Manifesto 2, for the future of mankind. These affirmations are not a final credo or dogma, but an expression of a living and growing faith. We invite others in all lands to join us in further developing and working for these goals. This is the secular humanism 1 and 2 is the reason why there has been so much strife for the Judeo-Christian heritage in this country. It's directly opposed to the Judeo-Christian heritage. There's one other thing. They talk about the toleration of all views. I don't know if I can find it here. They talk about the toleration of all views. Can't find it. Somewhere in the area of page 21. But they talk about the toleration of all views. Problem is, that's impossible. When you state that we believe that all views should be tolerated, then that means that anybody who holds to a traditional religion which holds to some narrow beliefs like Jesus Christ is God and salvation comes only through Him, then you can't tolerate that view. So it's impossible to tolerate all views. You've got to be dogmatic about something. And secular humanism, in the Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2, they show their views to be just as dogmatic as Christian views, as Jewish views, as Muslim views, and then they claim to tolerate all other views, except, of course, the traditional religions such as Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. So here, they're saying tolerate all views, but if you disagree with us, you're hindering human progress, and we're going to have to move you out of the way. And that's just some of the problems with secular humanism. Now, what we've discussed today, we stated that we would get our information on secular humanism from Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2, written in 1933 and 1973. We define secular humanism as the worldview that God either does not exist or is a non-issue in the affairs of man, and that man is the ultimate value in the universe. And we stated that secular humanism is a religion. We discussed some of the signers of Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2, and then we discussed their basic beliefs, such as atheism, there is no God, evolution, man is part of nature, life evolved from non-life, socialism as the best form of government, traditional religion is harmful, they teach no evidence, that there's no evidence for the supernatural realm, no divine purpose for mankind. They teach that only man can save this planet. They teach that heaven and hell are harmful illusions. They deny life after death. They teach that traditional religions hinder human progress. They teach that ethics are autonomous and situational. They teach the right to abortion and divorce should be recognized. That the freedom to pursue one's own sexual lifestyle, so long as it is between consenting adults, should be protected. They teach educating children in sexual freedom. They teach that the rights of euthanasia and suicide should be protected. That people are more important than rules. They fail to recognize that rules protect people. They state that the state should not favor any particular religion, except, of course, their own. They teach that we should get a world community and have an end of war. That international courts should be set up to settle disputes. How can a court stop violence, though? And they teach that poverty should be ended by distributing the wealth, which sounds a lot like communism. And then they teach that all views should be tolerated, except, of course, the views that differ with secular humanism. In the next lecture, we'll refute secular humanism with biblical principles. Thank you, and God bless you.